Hello and welcome or welcome back to Sex, Scandals, and Shenanigans. My name is Adrian and I'll be your host. In this show, I discuss history's most notorious lovers and mistresses. And also, I think at this point, anybody who has major sex scandal throughout history will be covered. In today's episode, I was initially going to discuss Alexios I Komnenos of the Byzantine Empire. Well, to be honest, he bored me. The only tidbit I found somewhat scintillating was the fact that he had an affair with the former Empress Maria. Nothing much came of that relationship to me to delve into. So, no further investigating or diving into Alexios' life. Suffice to say, I was finding myself, like I said, very bored. Maybe in the future I'll come back and do a rewind episode and discuss his daughter, Anna Komnena. So we're going to move on and go back to France. So today's topic, or couple I should rather say, are Peter Abelard and Héloïse de Argentil. They were known for writing letters, particularly love letters. But before we get to the letters, we need to dive into their backgrounds because there is a lot of sex scandals and shenanigans on Héloïse's family's part. Because Peter Abelard is older than Héloïse by a significant amount of time, we're talking like at least 20 years, let's start with him. Peter Abelard was born February 12, 1079 in La Palais near Nantes in modern-day France, or at the time, the Duchy of Brittany. While Peter, fourth known as Abelard, because I'm going to keep calling him that, came from a lower noble household, his father Berenger, earning a knighthood, understood that Peter's lot in life was not a militaristic one. His father saw that Abelard had far more promise as a scholar or academic than someone wielding a sword. His father not only permitted this, but encouraged his son to pursue the liberal arts and were all the better for it. According to Stanford's Encyclopedia of Philosophy, it states that Abelard devoured the works by Cicero, Horace, Ovid, Seneca, and Virgil. As his parents' eldest child, Peter could have inherited the knighthood from his father, but declined to pursue an academic career. During his pursuit of knowledge, his path took him to the following and studying under notable philosophers Rosselin and William of Champeaux. William of Champeaux taught philosophy at the cathedral school at Notre Dame. Oh, he was also a friend of Bernard of Clairvaux. Oh, that's nice that Bernard becomes important later during the marriage of Eleanor of Aquitaine and Louis VII of France during the 1120s and 30s. That's a future episode, but whatever. Back to Abelard. Prior to making his way to Paris to then meet William of Champeaux, Peter studied under Rosselin or Rosselinus of Compiègne. Peter was part of the Peripatetic school of thought, essentially followers of Aristotle's philosophies while he was studying in the Loire area. Also, Anselm of Canterbury, who was ousted by William II of England, but was brought back by sex scandal shenanigans alum Henry I, accused Rosselinus of heresy. Well, that's nice. Anselm seems like a sweet fucking peach. We get the impression that Peter is open to new and different ecclesiastical ideas. This did not mesh well with the traditional Anselm of Canterbury. Furthermore, after studying under William of Champeaux, by 1100, Abelard was then setting forth to become a lecturer himself. This then created a competition between former pupil and master. William thought because of this, Peter was an arrogant person, and also because in a debating forum, Abelard was proving to be able to best his former tutor. After his philosophical bouts with his previous mentors, Abelard then created his own school to rival William of Champeaux and Rosselinus. The school was created around 1100 in Melun, near Paris, near the Ile-de-France, the royal domain. By 1102 to 1104, he moved his school from Melun to Corbeil, which is even closer to Paris. Still in 1104, while his school was a success, Abelard was experiencing health issues, particularly stress. Due to the stress, Abelard had a nervous breakdown. He moved away back home to Brittany to recover. A few years later, by 1108, Abelard returned to Paris to resume his lecturing career. After his return, he started at teaching at Saint-Victor near the Ile-de-Cité, again in Paris. And once again, Abelard and William de Champeaux reignited their rivalry over the theory of universals. I'm going to break it down as easily as I can understand because, like I said, this is way above my head. To briefly explain, because I am really ignorant of these philosophical theories, universal theory includes material essence realism, hyper-realism. The essence is wholly and identically present in reach of each individual. That is, And the second theory is the universal theory. Discrete individuals. It was proposed by William of Champeaux that individual things are completely separate from one another. If you understand those philosophies, I'm very happy for you because I sure as shit don't. So guess who threw a hissy fit in the 1110s? Yep, William of Champeaux. After their debate about these theories of universals, Abelard had been victorious yet again. Gift of persuasion he has. Abelard was almost made the master of Notre Dame, but William was able to cock-block Abelard from lecturing in Paris, and Abelard returned to his school at Melun. By 1110 to 1112, his school relocated from Melun to Paris itself, notably in the modern Latin Quarter. Arrondissements 5 and 6, and it was overlooked Notre Dame from the Montagne Saint-Genevieve. Before covering Eloise's history, I should note that Abelard was not a monk or friar or was in the Catholic Church. Therefore, he was a secular ecclesiastical lecturer. So let's pause on Abelard and discuss Eloise's background. Eloise de Argentil was born around 1100 near Paris, France. Her parents were or are unknown. However, her uncle was canon, which is the title, Canon Fulbert of Notre Dame, a secular title and position. Due to her wardship of her uncle, Eloise had access to numerous literary and ecclesiastical works, which in turn enabled her to have an education that was unavailable to most women, including those in higher social echelons, let alone working women in the poorer classes. So the main question for this episode is, how did Eloise and Abelard meet? According to Abelard himself, he and Eloise met in 1115. She was around 15 years old and he was 36. I don't like the math and this age gap, but whatever. In any case, they met when Abelard was teaching in Paris. Abelard's school and lectures were quite popular. Keep in mind, while not just having access to literature that most people did not get to read, Eloise was also a polyglot. She spoke Old French, Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. I speak English and Spanglish. My mother is not impressed. I should point out that it was her uncle Fulbert who was looking or seeking for a tutor for Eloise. And from learning about his lectures, Fulbert decided that Abelard's renown was a perfect fit for Eloise's further education. In order to get closer to her, of course, praising Eloise's intelligence, also found her passably pretty, Abelard tries to become her private tutor. This attempt by Abelard came to fruition. Mazel tov! The beginning of a sapiosexual relationship, with also sex. There are some discrepancies as to who truly pursued whom. Abelard, in his Historia Calamitatum, My Calamities, he pursued her, but there's evidence based upon Eloise's writing that she pursued him. To make it easier to understand, they mutually pursued each other. Another descriptor that would be apt is a teacher-student romantic trope, almost like President Macron and his wife Brigitte Macron. I'm not making any other comment. But somehow, their relationship seems skeevy to me. In any case, both Eloise and Abelard established not only a scholarly relationship, tutor-student, but also a clandestine romantic one as well. Abelard describes Eloise as no mean beauty. She stood out above all by reason of her abundant knowledge of letters. This too comes from Abelard's Historia Calamitatum. I'm going to have a lot of problems speaking Latin today, so I apologize in advance. Again, it's worth mentioning that unlike many other young women in medieval France, or just in Western medieval society, Eloise's access to education was not common. And because of her access, due to Uncle Fulbert, the canon of Notre Dame, to literary materials, there was an intellectual desire coming from Abelard and just not as a, and not just a sexual one. Speaking of sex, we do need to get into their relationship, which truly was scandalous for the time. According to ThoughtCo.com, Abelard created an excuse that his quarters were a handicap to his tutorial services with Eloise. It was then that Fulbert allowed Abelard to move into their home. Because of this close proximity to Eloise, their studies not only covered the philosophical, but really the biological. As we millennials would say, they'd be bumping uglies. Of course, with their newfound relationship, they could not be publicized under any circumstances. More for Eloise's sake rather than Abelard. Why, you ask? Patriarchy and double standards, of course. Eloise was a young woman from a socially respectable family. Not that Abelard was either. Remember, his father was a knight. But Eloise's uncle and guardian was an important figure in non-ecclesiastical politics as the canon of Notre Dame. And by that, again, I mean he is not a friar, he is not a monk, he is the canon. So it's like an administrative position at Notre Dame. But secrets cannot be kept forever. Except, of course, you know, where Attila the Hun is buried, where Jerry Hoffa's body is, or the princes in the tower. Okay, so some secrets have been kept. In any case, the worst case scenario happened. Eloise and Abelard were found out. But wait, there's so much more. So, like many affairs throughout history, while Uncle Fulbert was ignorant of their relationship, quite a bit of Paris knew of theirs. And by ignorant, I mean their affair went on for many, many months. Uncle Fulbert's ignorance didn't last much longer. In fact, he found them studying, in air quotes, of course, together in flagrante delicto. meaning he caught them literally bumping uglies. Now, apparently, Uncle Fulbert got an eyeful of them or in the act. So, the lessons got a little physical, eh? Well, guess who got kicked out of the household? No, not Eloise, but rather Abelard. However, even after Abelard left, the two still kept communicating through letters. Remember, we're dealing with two very smart and capable people. Also of note, Abelard left part of himself at Fulbert and Eloise's house. Care to guess? I'll let it linger for a tiny bit more. Still can't think of it? Okay, enough time has passed. Eloise, through their relationship, became pregnant with Abelard's child. Told you secrets can't be kept. To avoid further outbursts from her uncle, Eloise and Abelard devised a plan to get her out of Paris for her confinement. Abelard reached out to his sister in Brittany in his old neck of the woods to help Eloise during her confinement. Furious about learning of their relationship, Fulbert was focusing on destroying Abelard's career. But if he took that path, he too would then ruin Eloise. Abelard offered the idea of marrying secretly to avoid further scandal. According to the site, Not Just Mothers and Wives, Eloise returned to Paris after birthing their son, Astrolabe, around 1118. And by the way, yeah, that's his real name. I promise, I can't make that shit up. Anyway, when she gets back to Paris, the topic of marriage was discussed. Abelard and Uncle Fulbert were in, albeit quietly, but Eloise? Eloise wanted nothing to do with marriage initially. She started making explanations as to why marriage was not something she wanted to pursue. She said to have loved Abelard for his sake. She preferred his glory, reputation, and interest before her own. She also said of Fulbert, she also understood that any proposition that she and Abelard came up with to Uncle Fulbert was not going to go the way they anticipated. She then posed the next couple of questions to Abelard. And what honor shall I get by being your wife? When at the same time, I certainly ruin your reputation. Also, how can the study of divinity and philosophy comport with the cries of children, the songs of nurses, and the hurry of a family? She answers this with another descriptive question. What an odd fight will it be to see maids and scholars, desks and cradles, books and distaffs, pens and spindles, one among another. Also, distaffs are part of the spinning wheel. Not necessarily the needle where Princess Aurora pricked her finger, but it's still the part that turns the wool or the linen into thread. You learn something new every day. Anyway, she finally answers these questions by this statement. Those who are rich are never disturbed with the care and charges of housekeeping, but with you scholars, it is far otherwise. Yet, a secret marriage was conducted in around 1118, 1119 after the birth of their son, Astrolabe. Unlike romance books or what movies tell us, this marriage was not publicized on purpose, much like the romantic nature of their relationship prior to Eloise's pregnancy. So again, we ask, why the secrecy? It's easy. The marriage was kept under wraps due to Abelard's position as canon of Notre Dame, previously held by Uncle Fulbert. If their marriage was known, the scandal would be tantamount. Well, though not illegal, but there was a push for anybody who worked in the ecclesiastical realm would be more celibate than married. But guess who was not thrilled about the marriage? Well, aside from Eloise, that is. Yep, Uncle Fulbert. He was so upset that he started to find ways to humiliate Abelard and expose his perfidy. After Eloise gave birth and after the secret marriage was conducted, their son Astrolabe was sent to be raised by Abelard's sister, Denise, in Brittany. Again, their old stomping ground. And according to Abelard himself, raising his son was not in his life's plan. He was known to have remarked, "Who intent upon sacred and philosophical reflection could endure the squalling and constant dirt of little children?" Abelard, while brilliant, is a noted narcissist, and here it seems an intelligent asshole. But I digress. Remember when I just recalled that Uncle Fulbert was okay with the secret marriage? Yeah, I think he ended up changing his mind. Uncle Fulbert then started rumor mills inciting scandal by making statements of their secret marriage. Well, that's super unhelpful. Any case, once parents got wind of Eloise and Abelard's marriage, Abelard wanted to get Eloise away to safer grounds, and to do this, he ordered her to go to the convent that she attended as a girl in Argenteuil, which again, isn't that far from Paris. After finding out that Eloise was sent to a convent, Uncle Fulbert misconstrued, now looking back, why Abelard sent her there to the convent in the first place. But Abelard's description of fixing this issue just is glorious. At this news of her uncle and his friends and relatives, imagine that I had tricked them and had found an easy way of ridding myself of Eloise by making her a nun.
While Abelard had thought and persuaded Eloise to not only join a nunnery and become a nun, there might be thoughts of him doing this not out of getting rid of her, quote-unquote, but rather the thought of her safety, and not just for optics, for his career, though that was a great boon. Another reason of Eloise joining a nunnery after their marriage was just another way to continue their correspondence. Now, keep in mind, I should say when he initially sent her to the nunnery, she was not wearing a veil. She was wearing a habit, which I guess is a good habit to do, while you're trying to blend in. But she did not take the veil until after what happens next. So what happened next? Well, the most scandalous part of their story has now come upon us. Thinking of how he, Fulbert, misconstrued why Abelard sent Eloise to the nunnery. Again, it was initially for her safety after the public knew about their marriage. Fulbert, to his mind, as a aka parent, thought that by sending her to a convent, Abelard was ignoring his vows that he made to Eloise. But again, as I said, he wanted Eloise to go to the convent, he being Abelard, for her safety. Now, we know that Fulbert was being completely misguided when he did the next thing. So Fulbert, in his albeit horrifying attempt in his mind, got a few men to go and visit Abelard at his home. These men, unknown to us, were not friendly in their demeanor. These men broke and entered Abelard's home, or into his home, and they made him less manly. They lopped off his Lincoln log. They deforested his twig and berry. His pig missile won't be oinking anymore. They turned him into a bangers and mash. Sorry. All right. Anyway, I'd like to say, not to beat around the bush, apt in this very case, Abelard, per Fulbert's instruction, was castrated. Ooh, that was ballsy. Okay, one more joke. Leave me alone. Because of the massacre of Abelard's masculine appendage, he decided to enter a monastery. It was also presupposed that Eloise, too, would pursue a nun's life. And not just after the secret marriage and child scandals. Abelard entered the monastery, the Abbey of Saint-Denis, and Eloise went to a convent in Argenteuil. Throughout their unintended careers, they still wrote each other and wrote on other topics, still within the philosophical styles. While Abelard was still able to write dissertations on conceptualism, nominalism, and realism. Again, don't ask me to define those because I have absolutely no fucking clue. Asking me to define those isn't or won't happen. I'm not that invested, nor am I that smart. Eloise's pursuits in philosophy included love, friendship, marriage as prostitution, theology, sex, and early Catholic proto-feminism. We discussed how they met. We discussed how they got together. We also discussed what the repercussions of getting together would be. And so now we need to speak about that repercussion. That repercussion being Astrolabe. So let's discuss their son. So clearly we know who the parents were. Astrolabe was born between 1116 and 1118. Again, no concrete date as to when he was born. Okay. Before going into what information we have about Astrolabe's life, I need to get on a soapbox for a bit. I do have one soapbox issue I need to discuss. Naming convention. While we are sure that the name Astrolabe is not common, it sort of makes sense due to who the parents are and who we've been discussing. I don't agree with it, but I can see what they were trying to do. Now, here's my little mini soapbox. Apple, Moses, Pilot Inspector, Lou Ivy, any child from Nick Cannon's loins, Kal-El Cage, and Elon Musk for children that were given a math or maths equation for a name. Why? Why do you do this? A pox on all of you for doing this to your child or children. You're not cool, hip, or smart. You're an entitled asshole. Rant over. While not an uncommon for extended family to raise a niece or a nephew, especially if the parents were jailed or had died, in Astrolabe's case, due to his parents' torrid affair, privately and when publicized by his great uncle Fulbert, his custody went to his paternal aunt Denise, who was Abelard's sister. According to Wikipedia, I know, whatever, his name was bequeathed to him by his mother. While an unconventional name, the definition of what an astrolabe is an astronomical tool to observe and calculate the cosmos, including stars, sun, and finding the time and direction of a star. Another side note, if you ever read the books or watched the series Outlander, you would know that James Alexander Malcolm Mackenzie Fraser, aka Jamie Fraser, had an astrolabe. Moving on. When growing up, Astrolabe pursued his education in the liberal arts and then attended the Nantes Cathedral School for a higher education. You know, like his parents. Since 1136, when Astrolabe was around 18 to 20 years old, he then attended the school in Nantes, where it was probable that he met and attended Abelard's lecture. Continuing in 1136, Abelard had become the schoolmaster at the Abbey of Saint Genevieve du Mont. It was there when the singing for Astrolabe was written. The singing of Astrolabe was a short stanza with advice from Abelard. Strolabe, my son, sweetness of a father's life, do more to learn than teach. If what you learn has escaped you, stop learning. Be attentive not to who it is said, but what is said. Due to the notoriety of his parents' relationship, there's not much record of Astrolabe's life after his education or what he was doing when after he turned 18, 20 years old. We know he went to a school, especially in Nantes when his father was teaching, but after that we really don't know about him or his early life. But the other thing is we also don't know what kind of relationship he had with his parents. This is not to say, however, that Eloise did try to support her son in his own ecclesiastical career. We'll get to that in a bit. To briefly sum up Astrolabe's ecclesiastical career, we do know that by 1150, he was a monk in the Cistercian Abbey in Switzerland. Because of who she was and what she wrote, and after being a nun and then a prioress and then becoming an abbess, Eloise did have some pull within the Catholic Church. She had written correspondences with Peter Cluny, or also known as Peter the Venerable, as well as multitude of popes. So she did ask Peter Cluny for a favor, who was the abbot at the Benedictine Monastery of Cluny. Eloise requested from Peter Cluny as a prebend or a clerical administration position be given to Astrolabe. So Astrolabe's career then took him from Brittany to the Cistercian Abbey in Switzerland, and then he died. As to when he died, the date is unknown, but one possible date from genie.com or French Wikipedia, the date was August 5th, 1171, and allegedly his age was of or around 54. And we return to the main couple again. After the castration event, Eloise was sequestered at a convent in Argenteuil. I hope I'm saying that right. I've said it like that many a time. She then took the veil as a nun. She's quoted as saying, "Why did I marry you and bring about your fall? Now see me gladly pay." This quote references an epic poem by the writer and poet Lucan Pharsalia. As she had become a nun, because again, her social options were very limited. Here were the options. 1, go back to Fulbert, not gonna happen. 2, she could divorce her now unmanly husband and try to remarry. Again, not gonna happen and not very likely. Or 3, enter religious life, which was the option she chose. Once she became a nun, she then promoted to prioress and then eventually to abbess at Argenteuil. Additionally, as she rose in rank, she was able to continue to maintain her correspondence with Abelard without further social strain or embarrassment. Also, as a prioress and abbess, she could continue, most importantly, her academic pursuit, which was still not available for most women, regardless of most social stations. I find it important to discuss Eloise's writings, most of which were recorded are letters between herself and Abelard. But remember, I also did say that she did write Peter Cluny, Peter the Venerable, and multiple popes. In fact, let's go over to people that she spoke with, aside from Peter and Abelard. Papal correspondences include Alexander III in 1163, Eugene III, 1147, Innocent II between 1131 and 1136, Lucius II around 1142, Anastasius IV, 1153, and Hadrian IV from 1154 to 1159. So that's nice. Impressive as her correspondence is, especially with the papal audience of actually many popes. Again, I want to focus and make sure we focus on the letters that she wrote with Abelard, because that is what she's really known for. And same with Abelard writing his responses to Eloise. I should note that Eloise started writing her letters after she read the Historia Calamitatum from Abelard. Again, History of My Calamities is what it translates to from Latin. Per the Christian History Institute, Abelard did acknowledge Eloise not so much as a lover, but rather a sister in Christ. He also saying that he also never loved her. One of the quotes that he wrote to her was, "My love, which involved us both in sin, let us not call it love, but concupiscence. In you, I cloyed a wretched appetite, which was all I really loved."
Yeesh, that's harsh.
Speaking of excerpts, let's go over some more between the two of them. But before I get into the next one, I do need to cover an Eloise response. However, Eloise refutes Abelard's stance with her saying, "For her love for him is not limited to just the body, but also emotionally, and that love begins and ends with the body, as love encompasses the whole person." That's per philosophersmagazine.com. Another quote from her letters to Abelard truly sum up her love for him. "God knows I never saw anything in you except yourself. I simply wanted you, nothing yours." A response from Abelard: "Love is incapable of being concealed. A word, a look, nay, silence speaks it." Another moment: "'Tis a thousand times more easy to renounce the world than love." And Eloise: Perhaps by mingling my sighs with yours, I make your sufferings less, for it is said that all sorrows divided are made lighter." From these excerpts, we can truly see the depth of friendship, love, and intellectual relationship that has transcended through the century. So while at his monastery, like Eloise, he continued to write his treatises, and also encouraging his students to think and not just objectively accept what the church tells them. However, just like his early career, his findings were considered heretical, including earning the ire of Bernard of Clairvaux. Unfortunately, because of his castration, he was also ridiculed by his former teacher, Roscelinus of Compiègne. I mean, he did debate him and lost to Abelard, so Roscelinus did get some perverse glee in ridiculing his former pupil. Speaking of school again, while cloistered at the Abbey of Saint-Denis, he grated upon the other monks. One story was crafted as a joke, citing that Bede, the venerable Bede, was the founder of the abbey. The abbot, named Adam, then claimed that Abelard insulted not only the monastery, but the French kingdom. Keep in mind, Saint-Denis is the patron saint of France. It was after that statement he was permitted to leave the monastery of Saint-Denis. After leaving the monastery, he became a lecturer again in the town of Saint-Aoul of Provence. He then went to live after teaching, because apparently it got to him again, and he wanted to live a hermit's life near Nogent-sur-Seine and be solitary. But with hermit, once people found him, he again became a lecturer, and because people just would not leave him alone. From 1126 to 1128, Abelard went to the Abbey of St. Gildas the Rees. By 1129 in April, after learning he was corresponding with Eloise again, Abbot Suger, another leading abbot, declared and decreed that the nuns at the Argentil convent were to be housed elsewhere and moved away. Now, Abelard did have some land, and so that's where he set up the Paraclete. I think that's what it's pronounced, because otherwise, I have no idea. Anyway, Abelard then became the new monk, also encouraged literary studies. Eloise then became the abbess of the Paraclete, which also allowed it to grow and had 6 daughter abbeys or nunneries associated with the Paraclete. And during his time as the head monk of the Paraclete, Abelard also produced his last work around 1140, Scito de Ipsum, or Know Thyself, which centered on the ideas of sins and that actions are not what a man will be judged on, but rather be based on his or their intention. Abelard, in his later years, started experiencing ill health. Unfortunately, he was excommunicated by Pope Innocent II, and included in his excommunication, his followers were imposed a perpetual silence, meaning they couldn't talk to him, he couldn't talk to them. In addition to this, he was also once again ordered to live at a monastery, the Priory at Saint-Marcel, near Chalon-sur-Saône. I'm sorry, I know I butchered that. While at Saint-Marcel, Abelard died on April 21st, 1142. Abelard's last supposed words may have been, "I don't know." That sounds reasonable. Also, it is possible that he may have died with or attributed to either mange or scurvy. Remember, hygiene back in the day wasn't all that, particularly in the medieval era. Anyway, Abelard's remains were initially interred at Saint-Marcel. They were then clandestinely, like everything else in the story, very much clandestinely moved to the Pericles, where Eloise died more than 20 years later in 1163. They were then interred together. By 817, under the French imperial reign of Napoleon, either Napoleon or Josephine heard of their story and allegedly had their remains moved to the Père-Lachaise Cemetery. It is for sure that Abelard's remains are there, but is unknown if Eloise's remains were also transported with Abelard's. It is alleged that she is buried elsewhere, but again, unknown at this point. We don't know what she died of. It could have been old age, it could have been disease. There's no record of her death. So, at this point, it's a good time to conclude this episode. In this episode, there were plenty of sex scandals and shenanigans, clandestine sexcapades, love letters, intellectual pursuits, of course, bodily mutilation, and tragedy. Abelard and Eloise really were the medieval version of Romeo and Juliet, except they weren't very young and they didn't commit suicide. There were no dual deaths, but a disjointed relationship, a child who was raised by his aunt, and letters that have ensconced readers and philosophers alike. There's wisdom, emotion, and ideas on love, religion, and relationships. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'm sorry it took so long to get here. Again, I was supposed to work on Alexius I of Komnenos of the Byzantine Empire, but I found him rather boring. So, I'm moving on. My next episode will be out at some point, and I think at this point, I know I keep making that point. You know, I need to stop using that word. Anyway, the next episode is going to probably be on Rosamond de Clifford, or the Fair Rosamond, who was the mistress of Henry II of England. So yeah, that's coming our way. So thank you again for joining me on today's episode. As always, try not to get into any shenanigans yourself, or I just may end up telling your story. You are also more than welcome to email me at sexscandalshenaniganspod@gmail.com if you have questions or requests. I'm totally open to that. And you also can visit my website, which is in the show notes. So again, thank you very much, and until next time, bye!